And Christmas was Vigilia, not Christmas Day. It was Christmas Eve in traditional way. We would have the tree. We would have the presents. We would have the 12-course meal. My aunt would always bring freshly made ravioli for the barst. In fact, she was an amazing cook, absolutely amazing. We would joke and say we would have to not eat for the day before, for a day, if it was our turn to go to Whitechapel for Christmas. We would have to starve ourselves the day before and not eat anything, because she was a real sort of Italian mama, and she would lay, if soon as your plate was empty, it would be refilled. And if you said no, that to her meant, yes, I want more. So you would have to either eat really, really slowly, but it was really delicious. So it was very difficult to sort of eat slowly. We would be like really enjoying the food. And of course, because we were enjoying it so much, she was putting it more and more on. And we were like barrels at the end. My dad would always have to undo his belt at least two notches before, and we would sort of stagger out of the flat. They lived in this little flat in Whitechapel. Stagger out of it and home on the tube, you know. So that was, and they would play, actually, I remember my uncle, when I was very young, they would play records. They had a record player, and they would play old records, I'm trying, of Italian songs. You know, my aunt must have been a, so there were a couple of sort of hits that if I heard them, I'd remember, think, oh yes, that was that I remember that from those days. I did go to Poland as a young child, but not during the Easter or the Christmas holidays. That was more in the summer. But only twice with my mother. My father would never went back to Poland. So it was traditional. So the holidays in terms of Easter and of course the whole, whatever tradition was linked into life with the Harcerstwo, we would go and have a Wędrówka out to a wood on the outskirts of London, and we would collect bajie, we would chop, we'd get permission of course, and cut the catkins, the bajie, and make and sell bajie outside of the church. We would make sugar lambs, baranki, from sugar. Forgot the molds from somebody who went to Poland and had, because some people were going to Poland more regularly than us, but so they got the molds, and we would make sugar baranki and sell them outside the Polish church. As Wędrowniczki was the older group, you know, so we were more, you know, we were sort of encouraged to be entrepreneurial, and we would bake hearts, honey cake hearts, serca kaziukowe, and ice them and wrap them up in cellophane and sell them outside the Polish club by then. So that was outside the club. So all those sort of Polish traditions would be echoed within our life in Harcerstwo. We would sing carols at Christmas. We would walk to the Polish houses in South London in our local neighbourhood, and we would sing carols. We would have learned those carols in the church. and at the Polish school and in Harcerstwo. So all of that, you know, would have been taught. There were some very creative people in the Polish community. One of them made one of those, is it called a tsep? The head, the sort of dragon's head that would, the mouth would snap up and down. Or was it a laikonik? I can't remember the terms, but we had one of those. Polska Szkoła, of course, would reinforce those traditions. Święty Mikołaj would come and would give the children presents. There was a Towarzystwo Przyjaciół Dzieci I Młodzieży. There was the parents would make donations. The koło KPH, which was the friends of the Harcerstwo, would help to fundraise for the obozy that we went on, and for the whatever needed doing, the coaches that we needed to take us to the obozy, that sort of thing. So we would fundraise ourselves a bit, and the parents and the adults in the community would chip in as well. And some of the businesses, because of course there were Polish bakeries were set up where we got our pączki from. We would eat the pączki at przerwa at the Polish school during the refreshment breaks. I do remember really early on there was a guy with a van, a small van, not like a transit, but this one of the smaller ones, and he would drive around the neighborhood, and at the back of it were loads of kielbasy. And ogórki and powidła and all the Polish produce. Before there was a Polish shop, there was a man in a van going around selling all the food that our parents would eat, the kielbasy especially. So he would sort of drive around, and mum and dad would buy stuff out of the back of his car, out of his little van. The more I speak, the more I kind of remember little things that were, you can see we were very knitted and integrated, how each branch of activity would sort of reinforce the traditions, the culture, the language, the way of being Polish was all wrapped up in the life of the church, the life of the school, the life of the Harcerstwo. So holidays, I mean, you know, the lodgers were lodgers, they would come and go. We wouldn't, apart from Wujek Stanek, who, you know, was a friend of the family, the other lodgers would sort of keep themselves to themselves. Maybe that was one of the conditions for living here. I don't recall any huge difficulties. I only recall one incident when actually Wujek, the other thing was, Dad actually liked to drink, not a lot, and only at Christmas and Easter usually. He liked gin. Interestingly, he didn't go down the vodka route. It was gin, Gordon's gin, and he would drink it with orange squash, because you didn't have juice in those days. We had orange squash. So he would put a bottle of gin on the table at Christmas or at Easter. Wujek Stanek would come down. He would join us with my uncle and aunt, and they would have a drink, you know, and it would all be discussions about the politics, their experiences, etc. You know, what was happening in the world. Winston Churchill, and Wilson, you know, the prime ministers at the time. Lots of debating, lots of politicking, and there was one incident when Wojciech Stanek got very, very drunk, and he had gone out, I think, for a walk to walk it off, and he came back and he couldn't open the door. He couldn't put the key in the door. It was very plastered. And he smashed the door, the glass, to open the door. He smashed it with his fist to open the door. And that's the only kind of, you know, incident, if you like, that I, as a young girl, was a bit frightened of, you know, this sort of behaviour when a man is drunk. And I was quite frightened at that time, but it, that's the only incident. Everybody else was really well behaved, and my father was not a drinker in terms of being reliant on, you know, if it would only be at family occasions. And of course, my uncle would bring at Christmas a little bottle of baby sham. That was my first introduction to alcohol at quite a young age, actually. I think maybe he bought a bottle of it at my first comunia to celebrate. So it was baby champagne. I was actually alcoholic. So I can't remember if my brother drank it. Maybe he did. Maybe he thought it was too babyish, but it was called baby sham. It had a little Bambi on the label, you know. I remember, and he would always bring a couple of bottles for the children. So that was lovely.
Sounds amazing. Anya, shall we just take a little break? Yeah.
Sure.
5 minutes break. And yes, they're just, I really enjoy listening to your stories. Yes, it's amazing. But let's just have a little break. Okay. And yeah. Okay. So shall we do 5 minutes?
Yeah.
No problem. Okay. Yeah, it's just 5 minutes. Okay. Okay. So we are back refreshed, hopefully. Okay, so Anya, I want to go back to a few things. One, you mentioned going back to Poland, and you remember we discussed that previously. And I really enjoyed those stories, you know, when you, so I want to just find, if you can just tell me about the time when you went to Poland, you know, the way you travel, this first interaction with, you know, people in Poland back then, you know, behind the curtain and so on.
Yeah, so when my father remarried, it was, family in, he married a woman from a family that he knew, who he'd gone to school with during the war, before the war, sorry, as a young man. He knew this woman, and he knew the family because they lived in the same Wieś. My mother was originally from Łódź, but had moved to a little place called Radzyń Podlaski, and her family had moved there. And he knew her. So when my mother, I don't like to call her a stepmother, because as far as I'm concerned, she wasn't a stepmother. She was my mother. And she had a different experience of Poland. She was more, if you like, sort of in tune with the changes and the situation in Poland, and didn't have that history of her family remained in Poland and survived the war in Poland. So she was more, felt more comfortable about going to Poland, even in those days, in the 60s. So even though my father was really never went back, but she did, and she wanted to stay in contact with her family in Poland. She was one of five, and so she wanted to connect not only with her brother in Whitechapel, but also her three sisters in Poland. So she managed to sort of convince my dad that it would be okay, and that she would look after us and bring us back. and we went, the first time I went to Poland was by coach. We got on a train, and then I don't actually remember much about the ferry crossing, but I remember it was Harwich, Hook of Holland, I think that was the route, and then a coach from there over to Poland with an overnight, I think somewhere in West Germany, but we definitely stayed overnight somewhere. And there was a lot of time spent at the border, because we all had to get off the coach, and some suitcases were taken out and searched, and I was very young at the time. I was 9 years old, so I, you know, never traveled before abroad, so I didn't know what was going on, but and then we sort of bundled back on the coach, and it took 2 days to get there because of all these border crossings and passports and everything. I traveled on my mother's passport, and as did my brother. I think we were both, we didn't have our own passports. And then we were introduced, we were sort of embraced into the bosom of my mother's family, and I met all my cousins, and there was a cousin that was of similar age to me. Most of my cousins were older, because obviously my parents did not start a family till after the war. My father was sort of well into his 40s, and so everyone in Poland was, you know, getting on with life, and so my cousins were older than me, but there was one that was my age. She and I became the best of friends. We stayed with my grandmother, and she had the most enormous garden. I mean, huge garden, in Olsztyn. We used to play outside and climb trees and build dens and hide under the pierzyny, you know, at night, and pick gooseberries, and in the evenings my aunts would come round, and we would play sort of Ludo, board games, and it was just a very, very happy time. That first visit to Poland was just a very positive experience for me, because I didn't realize I had family, you know. So yeah, so that was good. Sorry. Subsequent visits. Oh, and we also obviously we went to Radzin. We met with my father's side of the family, got to know my uncles and aunts there, and that was very much a small holding. My uncle had a strip of land, he grew potatoes, we would go and help dig the potatoes. He had a cow, a horse, a pig, some chickens. I think he had a dog, guard dog. And I remember the outdoor toilet. It was like a wooden box, and there was a desker with a hole in it, you know, plank of wood with a hole in it. And then if you look down the hole, it would just be a border, an angle. it wasn't, it was in the open air, and the chickens would be pecking around in whatever was falling through. And the flies, oh my God, the flies. You didn't want to spend that much time in there. So it was a very, very hot summer, I remember. And the stodoa was thatched. I can't remember if the house was thatched. It probably was. And so life was, a real contrast between my father's, background, this sort of farming, small holding, and my mother's, which was, she educated herself. She was very studious. She was the oldest of all the children, and she. I don't know how she managed to afford to get herself to educated, but she did. And she went on to higher education. So it became sort of quite academic, her background. I mean, not in the early days, obviously, but that was her sort of way of getting out of the house, I think, escaping the responsibilities of looking after all the other brothers and sisters. So that was my first visit to Poland. I wasn't aware of the politics because I was too young. I was just more, there wasn't anybody my age to play with in Radzin. So I kind of, got a bit bored after a while, because all the grown-ups were, talking about stuff I didn't understand. And I remember it was a very hot summer. We would go for walks into the woods, across the Wonki, I do remember there was one big sort of, looked like a pond, it was a deep sort of area with water, and it was a hole that had been made by a bomb that had fallen there. And there were lots of frogs in there, and there were lots of frogs in the woods as well, and I was always worried about treading on them, because I was sort of jumping as I was walking along. I remember being taken on a ride by my uncle on a horse and cart, and he had rubber wheels on his cart, which were the envy of the whole area, because it was such a soft ride, riding on a cart with pneumatic wheels, nice and soft, you didn't feel the bumps. And And it was, and I had a ride in the back of the cart, which was full of hay. And we used to play in the stado as well. It was like there's lots of bales of hay, and we would hide in that and slide around and jump off the bay hails and things like that. So it was my experience of Poland for the first time. Then when I came back, of course, there was all this sort of, oh, you went to Poland, and it was like people were sort of curious, but in a sort of cautious way, because it was behind the Iron Curtain. So, and I sort of thought, what do you mean? You know, only later on, obviously, when I was in secondary school and learning about history and stuff, and we did cover the Second World War. So, you know, this term Iron Curtain came in, and then I suddenly began to realize there are lots of television programs about the Second World War and about how Britain won the war, and, you know, very lots of films about it, and you know, a lot of the films and you know was about the story of the Nazis, nothing about the story of the 1.7 million Poles that were taken away from their homes, civilians as well as soldiers, and taken to Siberia to work in forced labor camps. That history is only just coming out, but that history is how the reason why there are people of my generation here in London and across the world. Our parents had that experience and did not return to Poland because Poland was not free. And so, and because it was under Russian rule, the chances that they would be allowed to live as civilians, having had the experience of being arrested and taken away, was not something for no reason, was not something that they wanted to risk. They didn't want to risk that for their families in Poland. So like my father, he didn't return, and they didn't decided, those that came to England, I think, and France, and you know, the those sort of areas that were closer to Poland always lived in that hope, because there was a government in exile in London. So there was a strong kind of feeling that, you know, if we stay close, if we stay together, then we at some time, at some point, if we raise our children with the traditions, the knowledge, you know, then we can return to Poland. And, you know, there was that real nationalism, sort of patriotism, I think, because nationalism has a very different kind of meaning now. But there was a real kind of yearning to rebuild the country, and that was sort of that was a sort of a thread running through, you know, reconnecting with family, with the motherland, Oitris now, the fatherland, reconnecting with family and rebuilding what the damage that had been done. Huge amounts of damage that obviously in Poland, being the sort of center of where the whole war started, huge amounts of damage. So this sort of wanting to do that, I think initially was a very strong feeling amongst the community, and wanting to stay together so that they could then en masse return, maybe. I don't know what their dreams and hopes were at that time, but I'm just sort of speculating. And then I remember going to Poland a couple more times, once with my mother and brother. My brother went to Poland on his own something that I never forgave my parents for, because I wanted to go with him because he spent an absolutely amazing summer in Zakopane, or in somewhere on the outskirts of Zakopane, because in the house, in a wooden sort of chalet looking house on the hills, on the mountainside. Idyllic, absolutely idyllic holiday with my cousin, with the very cousin that I was such good friends with, you know, and her family and other friends and family, you know. So it was just the most beautiful holiday that and my cousin always speaks very fondly of that time and wished that I had been with them, but I wasn't allowed to go. I was too young. So I didn't go, but then I went as I was a bit older, and obviously Mum wanted to go again. So I went, me and my brother went with her and again, it was a sort of, everyone was older. Some people had married, da, da, da. So as the family sort of grew and had accommodation, they were all living in Oshedle flats, and there would be three generations in that flat. There would be, you know, grandmother and aunts and uncles and children. So and it would be, you know, a couple of bedrooms. There would always be a sofa bed. Someone would always be sleeping on the sofa in the living room. But we would be accommodated around the sisters, you know, and we would sort of every day we would go and we would sightsee, because one of my cousin was in Warszawa that then, and so we would sightsee Warszawa. And then we would then go to Radzin and stay with my aunt. There weren't any children there yet. But they came sort of a bit later. There were two cousins, but they were older than me. So, you know, they were sort of out digging up potatoes my uncle was doing all the labouring work, and my two cousins there, two girls, were, I think, I'm not quite sure what they were doing, but I think they had got some sort of work in, but obviously always helped out on the land as well. But I think they had other work as well. So, you know, there wasn't many people around. I'd stay and, you know, we a few days, and then we would leave. So that was that time. And then I went again, not long after the martial law was imposed, and I went specifically to my brother. I don't know how, maybe he talked to my father, but he managed to make contact with the family of my birth mother. They were down in the south in a place called Jarosław, and he wanted to connect with them. So he went and met with them and discovered there was yet another huge family of cousins, more in line with, because my birth mother was 10 years younger than my father. So the cousins were then were of similar age to my brother. So he came back really enthusiastic and told me all about all these cousins that he'd discovered, etc., spent time with. And so when I was about 18, maybe 17 or something, I went and I met with them too. So I can't remember if on that trip I actually went to the, you know, the, I think I did, because I mean, I would, I probably did go and see everybody. So this included the family in Olsztyn, the family in Warszawa, the family in Radzyń. You know, it was a sort of a whistle-stop tour of everybody.